Hi, and welcome back to the third episode of Talent Talks, a new podcast series brought to you through the cooperation of the Talent City Centre Government, the City Centre New Arrivals Council, and the City of Talent, as part of the Talent City Centre for New Arrivals project. We're Cassandra and Chantal, and we're both part of Talent's international community, helping you to connect to your new city and feel more like a local.
In case you haven't caught our first episode, this project aims to connect with Talent City residents who may have moved here from abroad in the last few days, weeks, months, or years, and provide news, insights, and information about what's going on in the city in English every month.
In this month's episode, we're going to focus on members of our international community who may not be here by choice, and we're talking about the refugee community. We'll speak to Anu Viltrop from the Estonian Refugee Council and Rait Parts, who is a manager of Sinn & Saal, a social enterprise in Tallinn founded by the Estonian Refugee Council, jointly with members of the refugee or migrant community living in Estonia.
But first, let's start with some quick local news. Tallinn Old Town Days are taking place from August 12th to 15th this year. It will focus on the stories and legends of Tallinn. In 2020, Tallinn Old Town Days were canceled due to COVID-19, and this year they are taking place in August instead of July, and with processes in place to check that attendees either that are vaccinated with a negative COVID test or have recovered from COVID in the last 6 months. As in previous years, Tallinn Old Town will be filled with music, street theater, museum tours, and many more exciting activities across 4 days, and the vast majority of events will be free. Old Town Days will kick off in Tallinn Town Hall Square on August 12th at 7 p.m. with a Trad Attack concert. This world-famous Estonian band narrates stories while mixing old traditions and cultural heritage with modern rock music.
The Old Town Museums are open until 11 p.m. on Saturday, the 14th of August, with a special program of excursions, concerts, open houses taking place throughout the Old Town. Foodies and bookworms alike should visit the Jan Krossi Literature Cafes on the 14th of August. You can walk through the places related to the famous Estonian writer throughout the Old Town and listen to excerpts from his memoir performed by well-known actors by stopping in at the four cafes. And of course, there's the Knights Tournament. So the Old Tallinn Cup will take place on the 14th of August at 12 o'clock in the area next to Nigalista Church. This medieval full contact competition is a new and extreme sport whereby participants fight one another in real knight's equipment.
All young people and families are welcome at the youth and children's area near Schnelli Pond, where you can participate in several workshops, enjoy the stage program, and support young entrepreneurs throughout the festival. To learn more about the program of the festival, visit vanalinapäevad.ee.
Now, fun facts. Although Estonia has thousands of islands, Eigna Island is the only one belonging to Tallinn, located 14 kilometers off the coast. It's 3 square kilometers of protected natural reserves with beaches, forests, former military infrastructure, and the largest collection of boulders in Estonia, and even a stone labyrinth which dates back as far as the 12th century. To get there, it only takes about an hour, and you can take the small ship Vesta, which leaves from the Linnahall Quay at Patarei Harbour. The ship sails to Eigna and back on all days except for Tuesdays, and this will continue until August 31st, so book your trip soon before the season ends.
The line has already served more than 3,600 passengers in the last 2 months, thanks to the exceptionally warm weather this summer and an increased desire among Estonian residents to discover local attractions. Tickets can be purchased in advance up to 2 hours before departure, and boarding and on-site ticket sales start 30 minutes before the start of the voyage. As Chantal mentioned, the line will only run until August 31st, so get in quick and visit this great jewel of Tallinn.
In a quick transportation update, the route of bus number 66 is going to change from the 19th of July to the 12th of September due to the construction works on Kolde Boulevard, and certain stops will be omitted, so be sure to recheck your route and schedule during this time.
And as always, a COVID vaccination update. West Tallinn Central Hospital and Mustamäe District Government started a pilot project of mobile vaccination points this week. Every day until the end of the summer, mobile vaccination points operate in various Mustamäe settlements where people are welcome to come for their Pfizer vaccination as they go about their day without prior registration. If you want to make sure that there will be enough vaccines on your chosen day, you can register by calling 1247.
And lastly, according to the European Environmental Agency, Tallinn ranks fourth in Europe in terms of quality of urban air, behind cities in Sweden, Finland, and Portugal. Narva and Tartu also listed in the top 10 cities, with nearby capitals of Stockholm ranking 9th and Helsinki ranking 11th. Our mayor, Mihail Kolvart, commented that although the air quality in Tallinn is some of the cleanest in the European cities, the improvement of the condition of our air must be constantly addressed, supporting ambitious targets to be set to reduce emissions further on top of the already stringent EU requirements. In addition to improving the air quality, the Tallinn Development Strategy 2035 and the Climate Plan also set the goal of reducing the impact of overall urban life and economy on the climate.
And with that, over to our first interview.
So, many of us moved to Tallinn for our jobs, studies, remote work even, enjoying the amazing quality of life, snowy winters, islands in the summer, but not everybody in the international community of Tallinn is here by choice. In 1997, the Refugee Act was adopted in Estonia, and Estonia signed up to the 1951 UN Convention on the Status of Refugees. Since then, over 1,100 asylum applications have been submitted to Estonia, predominantly from citizens of the Ukraine, Syria, Russia, Georgia, and Afghanistan. So we are very excited to welcome Anu Viltrup from the Estonian Refugee Council to the show to chat with us about the experience of members of our international community who may not be here by choice. So thank you and welcome.
Hi. Hi. And it's very nice to be here.
So firstly, why don't we talk through a little bit about what the Estonian Refugee Council does and how you support the community here?
I would at first start with one comment that it's very good that you explain the wider wider context of the story. But actually, submitting an application doesn't mean that you will be granted international protection. That since 1997, something like 350 people have been granted international protection, so you can yourself calculate the ratio that how many people will be staying in Estonia. And of course, as you mentioned, that one thing is when you come to voluntarily, then you can face also some difficulties. But what we've experienced in the Refugee Council is that when you are not able to go back, mm-hmm. Then sometimes people are so homesick.
Oh, wow, okay.
That's very hard for them to cope. So they need, I think, lots of support, lots of friendly faces. But when we talk about the Estonian Refugee Council, then it's already 20 years old. We've been growing fast during the years, and now we can say that we have four pillars, four different areas we are working with. So at first, we do work with refugees who have been granted international protection in Estonia. We provide them different support services. I could talk about this a little bit later. Secondly, we also do work abroad. So we are definitely a humanitarian aid organization. We have chosen to choose maybe a fewer amount of countries, but we rather work in the longer term. So now we are working in Jordan, in Lebanon, in Ukraine also, and now we're thinking also spreading our branches and our activities also to Africa. The third pillar, let's say, is different kind of activities that comes from the fact that we may and we can consider ourselves as experts of forced migration. We do advocacy work. We stand for the rights of the refugees. We try to address different issues that would help them to get adjusted to Estonian life better. We do train different specialists. For example, we've been working many years now with kindergartens, where we provide different trainings, but also counseling to the kindergarten teachers that how to work better with children with migrant background, how to use or see or how to use or see this multicultural or the children with different cultural background, how to see this as an opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is one interesting journey we're having. We also do make lots of public events across Estonia, not only in Tallinn, but across Estonia, to show Estonian people, different people, different foreigners living in Estonia, refugees, but also other people with a migrant background, and also to show those foreigners what kind of beautiful places we have in Estonia, what kind of nice people we have in Estonia. It's important to build context, to build stronger connections between the different communities. So this is something we are trying to do. And the fourth pillar is a social enterprise, which we established 2019. And aim is actually twofold. At first, we've seen that getting the first job in Estonia is rather difficult for many people with migrant background, but for refugees, if you are not speaking Estonian yet, you are not good in English, or you don't know English at all, or you don't know Russian, then it's very hard to step in, let's
right.
say. So we wanted to provide them possibility to have work experience, to learn how it is to work in Estonian working environment, working culture, and so on. But the second aim is to introduce wider audience, people living especially in Tallinn, what kind of cool people we have here, who have bring with them different kind of food, different tastes, different handicraft, different culture, and what kind of blessing it could be to know about them, to know the people who have carried it with them to Estonia.
Amazing. And what are some of the initial impression? And what are some of the initial impressions or thoughts or even challenges of refugees who come to Estonia? What do, for both kind of good and challenging, but what are some of the initial thoughts?
As I said, that when you're forced to stay here, then lots of things may be a little bit different, because you know that whatever happens, you will have to stay here. What usually is that the first, when the international protection has been granted, then it's like a little bit like a honeymoon, because now I know that I'm safe. I can stay here in Estonia. I can live here. I can start my new life. I can get my children to school, to kindergarten, and so on. Usually we see that this honeymoon doesn't last forever, and there are always some not so good events happening, or maybe someone talks badly about you, or you don't find a job as quickly as you dreamed, or learning Estonian is harder than you predicted. and then it's up to the person how flexible he or she is. Is she willing, or is he willing to make adjustments the way they have been living so far? For example, when you come from Syria, then and you have been a housewife there, then it's not usually so convenient in Estonia. So you should think that maybe I should go to work, and it means you have to have maybe a little bit different mindset than you used to have. Or when you are the head of the family, that you have been the head of the family back at your home country, here you see that you need a full support of your whole family. Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes hard for the people To survive, let's say this way. But of course, we've seen different stories. There are people who are now living a very decent life. They are more or less happy. They have work. They have some friends in the community, but also some Estonians. they know Estonian in a level that they get by. Their children have good education. And also what they now want to is live quietly, and they don't want to carry this label refugee among them anymore. I think it's okay.
Yeah. And how do you see that experience differing between maybe adults that come here and children? So what a child comes to Estonia and they're in a new school with children who potentially don't speak their language or look like them or come from their background, but they're suddenly making snowmen and this life. How does that change for them?
I would say that actually service-wise, it doesn't really matter whether you're a refugee or you are just some other migrant background, that the possibilities for you are basically the same. Okay. So when you are the child and you go to school, then are you a refugee or you just come here for a while, you will have this individual learning program that focus on Estonian language learning at first. So usually kids are rather quick learning Estonian. In our experience, sometimes happens that children will become the translators for the parents, which is not actually a very good thing, because it's okay maybe to translate in the shop or on the street or some kind of party. But when you have to go to the doctor with your mom and talk about, I don't know,
right,
depression or some other health problem, it's too much for the kids. The refugee kids have said that it's rather hard to find friends. It takes lots of time. Yeah. But for the grown-ups, I think that sometimes we expect them to learn the language and find a job, and then we are happy as a community. But also, I think that adults also need support. They need help. Even if we have lots of support services in place, then it's in practicality, it's hard for them sometimes to combine going to work and learning languages. Mm-hmm. Learning a language is very flexible for refugees, but when you're working by schedules and you never know when you will be working and when you have day off, mm-hmm. it's still rather complicated. And they are both very important how to choose.
Yes. Yeah. And typically, do refugees forced migration tend to find themselves in Estonia because they've elected to claim asylum in Estonia, or through, for example, relocation and resettlement programs more widely?
Estonia took part of a resettlement program for a couple of years, but last refugees who arrived to Estonia arrived 2018, and after that Estonia hasn't been part of such programs. In the frames of this program, if I'm remembering correctly, a little bit more than 200 people came to Estonia. Rest of the refugees living in Estonia have came to Estonia themselves.
Okay.
Not always out of free will. They sometimes have happened to access Estonian border. I would say that the numbers of refugees in Estonia is rather small, especially during now the COVID times. And maybe one thing that when we talk about refugees, then people tend to think someone who's fled from the war, maybe from Syria or something like that. But for example, last year, the majority of people who were granted international protection were from Russia.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting about the different reasons that people may come to Estonia to claim asylum and status compared to, when we potentially think about the refugee community globally. We think people escaping Syria, the war in Syria, people in the jungle in Calais, in camps in Greece, etc. But there are a lot of our neighboring countries, if we widen that or think about the wider definition of a refugee or an asylum seeker, it's someone that's fundamentally unsafe in their current location, which can be for a number of different reasons. And when we look around our neighboring countries here, there are a lot of reasons why someone could be unsafe in those locations and need asylum and protection. So potentially I think one of the things I've learned through being here is that what Estonia gives to that community, or what they are to that community, is a little different than potentially what you jump to when you think of the refugee community on the news or what you read and things. And Estonia is a safe place for people for many different reasons, actually.
Yeah, well, Estonia grants protection, when it's really the countries what are in the war, but also there are people who ask for the protection because of political reasons, mm-hmm. or sexual orientation, let's say they believed in God in the wrong way. So there are really many, many different reasons why people are now in the situation. But I definitely feel for them, because it's not a picnic in the park to leave all your life behind and come to a totally new country and start all over again. It's not 100%. Easy.
100%. And you mentioned, so there's two kind of, I guess, statistics I want to touch on. The first is one you mentioned before. So although there have been 1,100 applications for asylum, the number of those that are approved are, I think I read somewhere around 500, you mentioned around 300. Where do you think that gap lies as to those ones that are not approved? What do you typically see as the reasons for those not being approved?
Estonian Police and Border Guard is the organization who you have to submit your application to, and who looks them through, and they make the decisions. Okay. So Estonian Refugee Council is not part of making the decisions, so I'm not able to comment it in any way.
Gotcha. And the second statistic I wanted to touch on was basically what happens after that initial residency period is granted, which is normally somewhere between 1 and 3 years. So do you typically see the refugees remaining in Estonia, or is there the opportunity for them to typically go back to their country once it's safe to do so? Or what do you see as the outcome normally of that period?
Some people have left, of course, to Germany, to Belgium, and so on, especially those people who got here through their settlement and relocation programs. Now it's the tendency that they are moved back here because of the Dublin Convention, that says that if you have been granted protection in some specific country, then this is a country who have to stay.
Gotcha.
I think that maybe one tendency what I would like to draw your attention to is that people who left usually left after 1 month or 2 months they arrived here. So I would say that they really didn't give Estonia a chance, maybe.
Gotcha.
But of course, if you are fled from home and you are feeling yourself like without the roots, I understand that they are looking for the place to be. So.
Yeah, and if you have family somewhere else or something, of course.
But it's also the tendency that lots of people are now moving for the possibilities living in Estonia under other conditions. For example, they are aiming for long-term residency if it's possible already, when you have been living in Estonia already for 5 years. And if you know Estonian very well, we already know some examples where refugees have succeeded with Estonian citizenship exam, so they are now Estonians.
Wow.
So it's not the way that you are a refugee and then you will stay like this forever. You can also choose living here in Estonia, what you want to be, let's say. But if you, let's say, don't do nothing as a refugee and you're living... premises is going to be ended, then of course police and border guard has to make a new decision. Gotcha. Whether it's needed to prolong or if they decide that the country they is safe to go back to, then of course then that's the way it is.
Yeah, gotcha. And many Estonians probably also remember a time where either their parents or grandparents may have actually been the refugees and had to go to other countries to escape situations themselves in Estonia. So how do you think that impacts or actually having gone through that yourself has impacted how open Estonia is to supporting people who now find themselves in that situation?
That's a very philosophical question. I would say that the world back then was most probably totally different than it's now. I remember the words of one Estonian woman, Elina Toona, who has write a magnificent book about her experience living in exile. She was a small girl when they fled from Estonia, mm-hmm. from the war. And nobody told her that Estonian Republic doesn't exist anymore. And it was a few years after the war when she saw one map and she didn't saw Estonia there anymore. I'm not maybe a good person to answer this question because I can just answer what I feel or sure. what I think. I feel that maybe Estonians are a little bit, how to say, the independency seems to them very tender, very new, maybe not so strong, not so solid.
Okay.
As Estonia is rather a small country, quite a small number of people, small number of Estonians, and I understand that they are afraid of losing their identity, losing sure. the culture, losing the language. So I understand the fear and I understand the uneasiness when it comes to the question of migration and refugees. I personally see it a little bit different way, that every person who comes to Estonia enjoys living here. And even if they go back, they took part of it with them, hopefully. They carried that in their hearts. If they learn a little bit about Estonian language, about Estonian culture, then again, we can spread those things further on. So I would rather see it as positive thing.
Great. And maybe one last question, which will lead in nicely to our next interview. But for those of us obviously based in Tallinn and in the international community, how can we, I guess, reach out, support, interact with the migrant and refugee community in Tallinn?
There are lots of possibilities. Right, we'll talk about our social enterprise activities very soon. So it's always very good if you would buy lunch from us or attend some of our activities. Just to look at our webpage siinjasaal.ee. But also it's possible to come and volunteer. Pakulasabi.ee, and there are lots of, or not lots of, but some possibilities what you could do in our organization. Just have a look and write and call to us. Let's see if we can find a way for a joint journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I would love to volunteer. There are certain requirements, things like, do I have to speak Estonian? Unfortunately, I do not yet. But is, you know, I can offer, I speak French and English, can I help? Can I contribute in a way? Or are there certain kind of needs that you guys have for
of
that?
Of course, there are many roles when we do need Estonian and good Estonian language skills and where we need some strong context. What does it mean living in Estonia? But there are also plenty of roles when it really doesn't matter. Okay. And language isn't so big issue. So you can still write to us and then let's see.
Great. And we will put the link to that website in our podcast information as always so that you you can visit that. Well, thank you very much for coming on and talking to us. This is very, very interesting and informative as always. So thank you very much and we'll be in touch.
Thank you for listening.
So thank you for that. And it is a perfect segue into our next interview. So as was previously mentioned, the social enterprise Sinyasal was founded by the Estonian Refugee Council jointly with the people with refugee or migrant backgrounds living in Estonia. And the cafe provides catering, holds workshops from African dance to Syrian food. And with us today, we have the head of the kitchen, Rait Pat. So could you please tell us a little bit more about Sinyasal, how it got started? Because from what I understand, it's very new. So tell us a little bit more about that and the and how you guys came about establishing this cafe.
Well, firstly, thank you for asking us to come here. And sure, as when it comes to generally the enterprise as such, then the aim of the thing is just to embrace and empower the people with refugee backgrounds coming to Estonia or being here. And as I'm sort of responsible more of the catering and food part, then I hope that Anu will help me here on the right side to give maybe a wider perspective on the other services. But yeah, like this is the aim to give the possibility for people who come to Estonia, like use their professional skills, or also maybe to give the possibility of starting off with something that they have aiming to do earlier. For instance, they have been really good home chefs, for instance, back in their home. Right. It wasn't a possibility to play it out on a wider wider screen. Then this is why we're here, and that's what we're doing. Oh, no.
Maybe I just add that usually our cooks are not professionals, and even if they have been good making food, making and feasting their families back at the home country, they never dreamed about this kind of career. But they have been flexible to change their career. They are flexible to try new things and let life surprise them. So it's usually not a dream for the people to cook.
Haven't been, yeah, but it's a possibility, and we're giving the possibility. Yeah, for them.
And it's also the one thing that you're not forced to work with us. You can do that if you want to.
Mm. True. And earlier as well, we were talking about, you were talking about embracing and people into the society, then what could be the best or better way on getting yourself, introducing yourself and getting within people is then what food and gastronomy is, because this is so much of an open book with food. You can't really lie. You either love it or you don't love it, and the love within food is always there. This is sort of a possibility for us as a community to embrace people who are coming here and vice versa.
And food is definitely one of those communal events as
absolutely,
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
How do refugees or persons with migrant backgrounds come about Sinyasal or getting involved with Sinyasal?
I think this is something like of a information which is spreading within the community, and to be honest, we are also taking people from the street. So, for instance, if there have been events where we see people like offering maybe their services, like working with someone, then our kitchen could be like a start off platform for them to carry on to get a wider audience to that, and as a relatively new business. For a year now, we have given this wonderful opportunity to Syrian, Venezuelan, also Southern African people to share their wonderful tastes with the people in Tallinn.
Very eclectic.
Indeed.
And so where do you see the cafe? How do you see Sinja Sal developing or evolving over the next coming years?
Well, as everybody, we have gone through COVID, and as when we opened the place 1.5 years ago, we sort of hoped to be there also as an open space. Sadly, we have been managing the whole thing through internet, and it has been lunch offers now for a year. The future, as a matter of fact, I came just before coming here to the studio. I came from a quick meeting with a cafe or a restaurant owner who is looking for a possibility to get like a new life for their kitchen. Okay. So we are looking for a possibility to grow into an actual restaurant, into an actual cafe, not only offering lunch offers and catering as what we're doing from our community kitchen today, but to become more of a place where you can actually come and meet and have the possibility of embracing the cultures.
Well, then let me be the first to say I wish you much success with
Thank
that.
You.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the e-shop?
Oh, yeah. Okay. This was also one of the ways on reaching people during the COVID. We are offering today our the goods that we're making there on the spot ourselves. For instance, biscuits, different coffee drinks, as well as handicrafts that people are making at home.
And our e-shop is also getting bigger through the time. Soon there will be available some of the fashion products that come from Lebanon, from our partners there. It's a brand called Masterpiece, and they are really, I think, very nice clothes. So keep an eye on. And we also now looking for different possibility. Yes, it looks eclectic, but as also the statistics shows, there are living in Estonian people with very different background, and that is something that we want to show. So we are now looking for the people who do some kind of handicraft to also that they could also use this e-shop as their platform. So also it's part of this empowering that they could find the ways they can show themselves as experts, they can sell the things, they can make the food, they can organize some cultural events in our premises and something like that. So, yeah.
Are there any, well, this is a bit of a, I don't even know how appropriate this question is in terms, because you mentioned events, but now with the new restrictions that we've already mentioned, are there any that are perhaps anticipated for the coming autumn season?
We actually planned a very big event on August 20th, which is actually one event what we tried to do already second time. Our Turkish community in Estonia is rather active, and they wanted to provide lunch on Independence Day to all people living in Tallinn. And last year it was huge success. Now, as the government has informed about the new restrictions, we are now trying to figure out the way how to do it. So I would advise to keep an eye on our website, siinasaal.ee, that what will happen or how we will provide the event. Something will come, definitely. But in the autumn period, there will be language courses, most probably Turkish, maybe even Arabic, maybe Spanish. It all depends from the people who are currently active in our enterprise. And if COVID allows us, then most probably we will start the series of cultural events where people from different background serve the table, talk about their traditions, their culture, they about themselves and the stories why they are in Estonia. And you, as a just a citizen, you can just stop by and listen to the stories and just taste how this different culture feels like.
Speaking of stories, do you have any anecdotes for us in terms of impact that Siinasaal, for instance, has on some of perhaps the persons that have been working or volunteering or at the cafe?
Right, do you want to start?
Give us two or three.
Just to shoot like this and like... As always, like I end up with an empty head. Like, do you have? You also have a longer background on that part.
Just can remember one story. One Turkish guy who is also working in our enterprise. One day, sits next to me and says that, "Yeah, Anu, I have been wondering the Estonian working culture that we in Turkey we." We organize, and maybe in the later stadium we will think that what we will do and how we will do. And with you, at first I was really confused because you started planning. You said that it's the event will be in 1 month time, and we have very few time, and we need to plan, and then we have meetings, and then we divide the task, and then we plan, and then we will have the meeting. So it was very hard for him at first. Maybe to understand the this kind of planning, that what kind of blessing it could be. But he had to admit that if he has gone through this several times, he had understood that we also usually consider the risks. That means that when the event arrives, then we usually know what to do, and we are not, you know, running out of ideas how to solve different problems on that day.
There's one thing which sort of comes to mind. It's not necessarily a fun thing as such, but we Estonians, we tend to be extremely pragmatic sometimes, like too pragmatic on things. and within also we sometimes, I have the feeling, lose this daily politeness. And what this work now for a year has taught me is that when calling to someone or meeting up with someone, you actually take the moment to ask, like, look them into the eye, to say them hello, and to ask, like, hello, how are you doing? and it's not just the politeness, but it is actually that you take the time to sort of get a quick brief on what has been happening in between. And this sometimes, it slows things down.
Right.
But then on the other side, of course, if you're not boiling milk at the same time, but at the same time, it also gives you this kind of a nice, humane atmosphere for a daily job. So this is something which I have really enjoyed. And in a way, I hope that we can also deliver that understanding, especially through our Arabic part of the kitchen to people who are offering or taking food for us, just like a nice humane moment to their daily doings.
It's so interesting you say that. I remember going back to, I've been in Estonia 2 years now, working majority with Estonians, and my colleague, who's a good friend of mine, took me aside in the first couple of months in Estonia, and he said, you have to stop asking people how they are. Estonians find this very weird. Like, they, why is she prime? Because I would just say, hi, how are you? How are you doing? Like, I would be on a hike and someone would walk past me. I'd say, hi, how are you? And they look at me very strangely. And my colleague said, you have to stop doing this. Mm. They think it's very weird you're prying into their personal lives and asking about their day. So it's funny that it's actually the reverse, where you found that actually that's a way to further engage with people in the international community.
Definitely. And I think it's also like in a way like possibility for us to look into ourselves and also to our tradition maybe in longer run, because like, for instance, if you go to southern parts of the country, like outside of urban areas, outside of Tallinn, then for instance, on the roads of Vöru or streets of Vöru, if you come across like with a new face, you end up being said hello. And like, if you go to a small store, then people actually do ask you like hello, how are you, or like, where are you coming? So there is something maybe that from the newcomers we can also like be reminded of ourselves in a way.
Well, that's a good point. You actually walk in the forest and you meet a person, then normal people say hi to each other. They ask that, did you collect berries or mushrooms? Did you find something? That's a
of
very
course
normal.
You never tell like where from.
Secrets,
yes.
No, but it sounds like this social enterprise provides value in both directions.
Absolutely. And this is something that we're looking for. Yeah.
Do you guys have any plans for any other social enterprises?
At the moment, no. We are rather trying to sort of get going with what we have on the table already, and to give a bit of a quality boost to what we're doing.
Yeah, but on the other hand, when we talk about our humanitarian aid side, then lots of our projects are somehow focused on entrepreneurship or social enterprise, because we see it rather. In long term, it's rather more effective if people are able to earn some income. So the answer is yes and no. Most probably we will not establish a new social enterprise in Estonia anytime soon.
Outside of the borders, it might be possible. But this is also maybe a good point where I would urge people to turn their heads towards us, and if there are any good chefs who find themselves without a job or just want to do something, then we are also currently looking for new people, new kitchens to the row that we're offering today. So dear listeners, if any of you is a good chef, then do send us an email or call. Maybe we can find a way to cooperate.
And the Estonian language skill is not necessary.
No,
in this
context. No. But it's a good possibility also to learn with us. Yeah.
Because strangely, when we talk about how we work in our enterprise, then usually it's predicted that we do speak in English, but it's not the case. Estonian is the one and only joint language we have.
Yeah. For some people, it is that you end up having Venezuelan and Turkish person talking in Estonian to each other, because this is the common.
Would you have ever imagined Estonia would be a lingua franca between international communities?
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned the language. I think probably the fastest developing part of my Estonian is food, because I actually cook in Estonian. So I'll read a recipe in Estonian, because it's like, it's repetition. It's things that you're working through every day and you see the same things come over and over again. So I'd say actually the strongest part of my Estonian language skills is things like boil water and chop onions and things like that. So I could 100% see how this would be a great opportunity to
join the team.
I could come in. I can boil water and slice garlic and all that kind of stuff in Estonian.
That's wonderful. Let's continue to co-create opportunities.
Yes.
Thank you both for being here with us. Really, I learned a lot.
Me too. And to visit you guys, where do we find you? Obviously the website, but where can we find you in the city?
At the moment, we are located in and will be located on Liivalahe Street with a Liivalahe 28. I'm really bad with numbers.
Good to know.
So and starting from second part of August, we are again opening our lunch offers. So great. You can, if the COVID allows, then you're welcome to come and dine with us in our community center, or then take the lunchbox to be delivered to your doorsteps.
Or participate in some cultural or cooking events. We are also planning, well, if COVID allows.
If COVID Perfect. Allows.
Yeah, this Turkish lunch. I'll keep my eye on that for sure.
The I've heard that. Sound very nice too.
That's quite an event, a Turkish lunch.
Great. Thank you so much. And that's a wrap on episode 3. If you want to learn more about local news, subscribe to the Tallinn in Brief English newsletter, which comes out once a month and provides a great overview of what is happening in the capital. You can find a subscription link in the podcast description.
And also, if you live in the city center and you're just interested in the day's updates from Keskelin, have questions for the local authorities, are willing to share your thoughts and ideas on urban space organization, or any other concerns about the Tallinn Central District, you can join the Tallinn City Center for Expats official Facebook community administered by the Tallinn City Center government.
With that, happy August, everyone. Stay safe, and we'll see you next month. Hiadaiga!